welcome to the show. If it's Thursday night, it's time for Race Trackers. This is a quiet week before the Belmont Stakes, and attention this weekend goes to Little Penn National in the Pocono Mountains and Santa Anita on the West Coast. I'm Bill Gottimer with my co-host, Mike Monroe. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night. We also ask you to consider patronizing our sponsors, PassTheWire.com and Poppy's Place Restaurant in Floral Park near Belmont. As I said, I'm always proud to be joined by Mike Monroe as my co-host. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Bill. Good evening. How are you, buddy?
Good. Quiet week this week, right?
Yeah, it's like the calm before the storm, but there's a lot of stuff going on, and we look forward to next week's Belmont Stakes and maybe a 16 horse field.
Yeah, it's it looks like what will be a huge a good betting race, not necessarily having all the high profile names, as people probably know. Both the Derby winner, Always Dreaming, and the Preakness winner, Cloud Computing, have decided to pass on the Belmonts, and that leaves really only Irish War Cry, Looking at Lee and Classic Empire as horses who ran in both the first two legs of the Triple Crown, and will come back.
Absolutely. You know, I was thinking to myself today, maybe you can help me, Bill. I was trying to figure out when was the last time that we had a Belmont Stakes where the Kentucky Derby winner and the Preakness winner, neither of them competed in the Belmont like we're going to have this year. And I couldn't figure out.
You know, I saw that somewhere, and I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was obviously a long time ago. Someone maybe will was listening to the show will know it and send it to us. I can't off the top of my head. I did see that, but I think it was the 1990s, I think. I don't think it's happened this century. But again,
wow.
I don't know.
Been a long time.
You predicted it, I guess, right, that, you know, Chad Brown likes to give as much time as possible for his horses in between, and it was unlikely that he would come back on this short notice. And Always Dreaming, you know, came a long way in a short time, so he obviously can benefit by the time, and it seems like everyone will be pointing towards the second half of the season.
Well, I guess it'll make it for an exciting Saratoga, and we'll have a lot to talk about, and Saratoga will be here before we know it, Bill.
Right. Well, of course, we don't want to jump ahead of ourselves even this week about talking about the Belmont card, but the Met Mile, which would have been this Monday, instead has the last few years has been moved to the Belmont card, and we've discussed that a lot. But I guess the Met Mile lost a big competitor, Paul Pomper's horse, and Chad Brown's horse, Connect, suffered a minor injury and seems to be out.
That's what I've heard, Bill. Yeah, but you know, he might have come out of the last race, a little bit. Warren, he's had a tough campaign, the last couple of races back-to-back. Like I said, in the beginning, we even said about Cloud Computing, Chad takes his time.
Yeah, they did say it was a little bit conflicting reports, though. I mean, they said that Connect came out of the last workout with a little problem, with a minor injury, but then they said his career plans are up in the air. So I don't know how minor it could be if they were thinking about retiring him. But
wow,
that's too bad. They've lost a little luster on that race. You know, there's no question about that.
I think we're gonna have Mohamed in the Met Mile, aren't we, Bill?
I think so. Although he ran rather poorly the last time, I think he worked out well this week. And I guess the Met Mile always it's the Met Mile, so it does draw horses no matter what. And I guess this will maybe even make the field bigger if Connect is not going to run. Maybe other horses who didn't want to challenge him might come to the fore.
Right. No. The Belmont days. You know, even though like we spoke of many times on the show, and I know you and I are. Old-fashioned. We look forward to the Met Mile on Memorial Day. They have their reasons for Belmont having it on a Belmont Day, and I guess the main reason is because of all the money that's played that day and all the paramutual betting, that goes into it that day, and I'm sure that's that's a big thing for Belmont that day. You know, that they bet probably I think like $13 or $14 million on track, if I'm not mistaken, maybe more.
Right. Well, I guess they were trying to make sure that Belmont Day was a big day, even in years like this, where you have no Triple Crown, and worse yet, no Superstar, and worse yet, no winner of the Kentucky Derby and no winner of the Preakness. That being said, I tend to think the crowd's going to be pretty small this year. I think that it's expensive, and I think people may or may not come out. I mean, I think I was speaking to the local police in Florham Park, and they're not planning on a big crowd at all. You know, they've had only one planning meeting for it. They seem to think it's going to be in the 30,000 range. So
I was just going to say
we'll
between
see.
30,000 and 40,000. That's what I would estimate.
Right. So whether or not that's worth giving up the other big days at Belmont is, you know, but again, we've had this debate before. We'll talk more about it next week.
Absolutely.
Speaking about Paul Pompa, he continued his winning streak this week. I looked back on the horses that we highlighted last week on the show, and almost all of them ran well, you know, I'm proud to say. And we highlighted Paul Pompa's race with Hard Study versus Jimmy Jerkins' horse Adulator, and Adulator continues to disappoint. Adulator has not really stepped up to the great promise that we thought he had early, and Hard Study continued to run huge and won that race rather easily.
That's amazing that you brought that up, Bill. And you know, I know myself, along with you, you know, the Centennial Farm Horse Adulator, I had high hopes for him. I thought he was going to be something special. And with everything that Jimmy Jerkins has been doing, all the great work that he's been doing, this seems to be one stumbling block for him. But, you know, hopefully Jimmy will figure it out. He's a great horseman, and Adulator will turn the corner.
Yeah, I mean, they put blinkers on him. They tried that this time, and that didn't seem to ran better, but he still didn't really wasn't really competitive with Hard Study, who just has gotten good for you know, no surprise for Paul Pompa, who seems to win everything. So we expect to see Hard Study in some stakes races before the summer's out.
I'm sure we will.
When we move to Santa Anita, you know, we spoke about Stormy Liberal, who absolutely loves running down that course. I don't know if you saw that race, that 6.5 furlong downhill course at Santa Anita.
Yep.
Stormy Liberal won again, and it was probably the most confident ride you've ever seen, right? Did you happen to see that at all?
I did. It looked like from start to finish, Bill, it was never in doubt.
Right. And meanwhile, he won by a head.
Right.
It was only a head margin at the finish, and I think the trainer Peter Miller even said, "Joe, I wish he hadn't been that confident," but I think that horse has a tendency to bear in, and I think the rider was making 100% sure he didn't foul anybody because he had so much horse. But it looked very odd because he was just so much the best, and meanwhile he won by a measured head. And if you see that term for our listeners, a measured head means that it was a head, but it could have been more. He was just constantly keeping a head in front, and it was a measured finish. It certainly wasn't all out. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Sonneteer, Kentucky Derby to the maiden race. He didn't win the maiden race either. So I don't know. You know, I don't know.
That's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, whatever great hopes they had for Sonneteer that made them think he could be competitive in Kentucky Derby has not yet panned out. But there's probably something there that they know, and maybe we'll hear from him later on. But it's odd enough to go from the Kentucky Derby to a maiden race. It's even odder to go to the Kentucky Derby to a maiden race and actually lose. I just want to make sure we're staying on the internet here. And then I guess the big thing, of course, was Lady Eli. You know, Lady Eli in the Gamely Stakes just ran so well. Did you happen to see her race?
I love the ride by Irad Ortiz. You know, Chad Brown had mentioned that he was going to maybe have to change some things up with her and maybe keep her a little bit closer to the pace, and that's exactly what Irad did. When they turned for home, I thought the horse that Corey Nakatani on looked like Corey had dead aim on her, but she's as game as they come. She dug in, and you know, she won by a half a length, and you know, I was glad to see her. I mean, how could you not root for Lady Eli? She's one of my favorites. So everything that she's been through and everything that she's overcome, and Chad's got it right again. I mean, it's just a great story.
Yeah, and with that, we had an opportunity, maybe some of our listeners have already heard it, but we had an opportunity to speak to Irad Ortiz this week for a few minutes. It's just a four-minute spot, and what I'd like to do now, I think we'll play it now, and then we'll continue talking about other things. Is that all right?
Sounds great.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's a short. This is Irad Ortiz talking about Lady Eli and looking at Lady. Well, I'm happy to welcome Irad Ortiz to Race Trackers. Hello, Irad.
Hi, how are you, sir? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for giving us some time today. Coming back from California on a successful trip out there where you won two races, including a big win in the Gamely on the beautiful Lady Eli.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Tell us about Lady Eli. You've ridden her in every race, and we all know she's overcome such tremendous tremendous illness and difficulties. Is she back in full form now?
Yes, she's a nice. She's a maybe the best filly I've been riding. She's a nice filly, and I mean, what I can tell you, she beat everything. She got laminitis, and she come back good. She come back healthy. The trainer do a great job with her, and she come back in form, man. She's amazing.
Yeah, it looked like she was very game. We looked at that race, and it looked like she was drawing off again at the end. Did she have another gear at the finish?
Yeah. When she feels the other feelings, so she fight a little bit with her. She's a fighter.
Well, that's great. I know. A lot of people love that horse, and a lot of people are rooting for her to come back. And Chad Brown has said it'll be only grade ones from here out in for her.
Yeah. You know, he's so talented. He got good horses, and he's a great trainer.
Well, I saw the picture on Twitter. It looks like you had a little bit of a nice celebration on the flight home with Chad Brown's assistant, Sherry.
Yeah,
right?
With Sherry. Yeah. She worked hard with that filly. When that filly get hurt, She was there almost every time. We was in Saratoga, and she stayed there the whole time. Maybe sometimes she don't go back home. She's still sleeping at the office because the filly need medication. She need to get out and walk. And she was there 100% every time she needed. So we have to appreciate that, too, from her.
Yeah, it's just a tremendous story all around. Well, congratulations. You know, we want to have you on. We want to have you on some night to speak about your whole career. But really, this time of year, we can't help but think about last year's Belmont Stakes with your tremendous ride on Creator when you won a classic race.
Yeah, that was one of my big goals, win the Belmont Stakes. And we are so happy. We appreciate the opportunity, and we're looking forward to do it again with Steve Asmussen.
Yeah, well, I guess you teamed up with Steve Asmussen and Toby Sheets last year on Creator, and it looks like you're going to ride for them again in this year's Belmont on Looking at Lee.
Yeah. That's the next goal, and my agent just told me that we're going to ride his horse. So I'm so happy.
Well, actually, it's a beautiful teaming up again with teaming up with the same connections. Let's hope you get back to the winner's circle again with them.
Hopefully.
Well, we don't want to keep you. I know how hard you're working. I know you're riding today. But as I said, we'd love to have you back some night to speak all about your brother and how John Velazquez has interviewed you and how you've taken over New York by storm over the last few years. But I know you're working hard this morning, and I thank you for being on. And we look forward to seeing you work up towards the Belmont Stakes.
Thank you. Thank you for everything, sir.
Thank you. Irad Ortiz, everyone. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Well, we caught Irad that morning after working out, and after working his horses out, he was kind enough to talk to us. Again, it's amazing the schedule these guys keep, right, Mike?
Those two guys, him and his brother Jose. I'm going to tell you something about those two. They are since they were Bug Boys, they've just kept to their work schedule, and they're out every morning. They're shaking hands. They're seeing people. They're getting on horses. And I'm going to tell you something. They go out of their way to say hello to people. I see them every morning. They come out of their way to say hello to me. They're just two fine, fine young riders and very talented. And you know, the sky's the limit for both of them. And I'm happy to see it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's ridden a lot of horses for Chad Brown. He's kept him out on Lady Eli all her life now, and you know, I thought that was a superb ride. And when I asked him that, I didn't mean that. Some people said, as you said, Corey Nakatani's horse looked like was going to make a run at Lady Eli, and as soon as she saw her, she just ran off again. So she seems to be back full force as far as I'm concerned. I know some people were questioning whether going out west meant was looking for easier company, but I think you know, she seems to not have lost anything to me. So.
And she likes that firm turf, Bill. That's the kind of course that she excels in, and that's what she got. And look, Chad Brown's not going to ship halfway across to California if he didn't think he had a good shot. And, you know, all you got to do is follow Chad Brown, and you can't go wrong. But she's just a dynamite horse. And how could you not root for her? She's overcome everything. She overcame laminitis, you know, stepping on a nail in a freak accident. I mean, you know, you just got to root for her. And she shows up every time.
Right. Absolutely. It wouldn't be a weekend if we didn't talk about Bob Baffert. Bob Baffert had two big stakes wins, one in California, what used to be the Hollywood Gold Cup, and now is the Santa Anita Gold Cup. That still doesn't roll off of anybody's tongue. They just call it the Gold Cup. But he ran an entry of American Freedom, who was favored, and Cupid, who supposedly needed a race at 7-1, and as luck would have it, American Freedom lost, and Cupid ran off and hit from the field at 7-1. Did you get an opportunity to see that race?
I did. Bob's been known to do that every once in a while. He'll say, I think this guy needs a race. And, you know, then, like you said, you'll find him in the winner's circle about 2 minutes later. But, you know, he's another guy. He knows where to run his horses. He knows when they're ready. And, you know, I'm glad to see Cupid come back to his winning ways.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of controversy in the race. American Freedom drew the number one post, and at the distance there, it came out in the chute and came out and immediately made a right-hand turn and kind of wiped out a bunch of horses, including the horse was in the second post. And meanwhile, Cupid was out in the middle, and you know, his uncoupled entry mate had an unmolested trip while there was all sorts of chaos behind him. It was shades of Bayern where Bob Baffert's horse did the same thing to a number of horses. So I know there was some speculation on that as to whether or not that was planned or whether that was something that should have resulted in American Freedom being disqualified. But it seems like the new rules, and no one said it's a new rule, just in practice, seems to be whatever happens out of the gate is all fair game. And you don't see anybody be disqualified for something coming out of the gate any longer.
Very, very rarely. I think we had one incident either last week of Aqueduct or first week of Belmont where they took down a Gary Gullo horse in New York for interference at the start. I believe Angel Arroyo was aboard, and that was the first time in a long time that I've seen someone be disqualified from the start of the race, unless, of course, a rider, unfortunately, was dropped or, you know, clipped heels and a horse and a rider went down. Like you said, it's very, very rarely that there's an inquiry and a disqualification.
Right. The other Bob Baffert winner was Danzig Candy. We spoke about on the show last week. He returned in Texas at Lone Star Park to win the Lone Star, I guess, mile or Lone Star handicap. I may not have that correct. It was a sloppy track, and Danzig Candy led the whole way. You remember Danzig Candy last year was on the Kentucky Derby trail and then got transferred to Bob Baffert a little bit late in the game, and really had taken off all of the rest of his three-year-old year, but he now seems to be back and will probably be a force, you know, in handicap races for older horses this year. It seems like Bob Baffert has almost all the big horses other than Jimmy Jerkin's horse, Frank Stronach's horse, Shaman Ghost.
Like you just said, it's amazing the job that Bob does, and you know, he, like we said, he knows where to run them, when to run them. you know, it's good to see though that these horses like Cupid, you know, coming back into training and running good again. But you know, Bob's another guy. He excels at what he does, and you know, he's definitely a force to be reckoned with, no matter where he runs.
No, that's right. That's right. It's
but I gotta say, like you said, now with Dan's and Candy being in Bob's hands, he was kind of our disappointing horse last year. Everybody had, you know, big, you know, a lot of plans for him and thought, you know, high hopes for him, and it really didn't seem to pan out. But maybe Bob found the card, and let's see what happens.
Well, he seemed to be over the top by the time from the Derby preps. By the time he got to the Derby, and for our listeners who don't know that term, over the top means that sometimes you get so fit, you get so fit as an athlete, and you fire a big effort, but your body just can't sustain it, and it's the big trick with training horses to have them peak on the right day, and not have them go over the top. Once they've gone over the top, that their body has gotten as fit as they can get, and after a big effort, it goes downhill from there. And then they do need significant time off. And I guess, you know, not so many people have the luxury or the patience to give the necessary time off, because sometimes they don't come back as well. So you're reluctant to stop. But it seems like by the time Dancing Candy got to the Classic last year, he clearly was over the top.
Absolutely, I agree 100% with you.
Yeah, it's you know, so but it's they regrouped, and he's going to be a factor, I would think. I guess some other news we want to speak. Well, we'll finish up with Sunday. Sunday at Belmont, our friends from Zilla, their horse Benevolence, ran a tremendous race. Just got beat by a short half a length of neck, and another excellent ride by Eric Cancel. Continues to ride for Zilla, and he continues to ride well. His numbers are tremendous in races where his odds are not long. If his horses are under double digits, he seems to you know have a very good record.
Another fine young talent that we have in New York. He had a great apprentice. A great apprentice year, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think he won 15 or 16 races as a Bug Boy in Saratoga, which is a phenomenal feat to pull off against the riding colony that's up there in Saratoga. Eric's a very, very good rider, another jock who's out there every morning, hard worker.
Yeah, certainly no problem with that ride on Benevolence, and our friends over at Zilla, you know, they continue to put out horses that Mike Piazza runs a good outfit there. He has a number of trainers, but they all seem to run well. Then we'll finish up with on Sunday, Touch of Star Quality came back for our friend Samantha Siegel, and Touch of Star Quality just loves Belmont. Won again, paid $8, beat Destin, who was a little disappointing in his return. Remember, Destin ran second last year into Belmont, beaten only a nose. But Destin returned and didn't seem to be the Destin of old. We'll see whether they persevere with him or whether or not he needed a race. But Touch of Star Quality, who's now kind of a strange setup. They gelded him very late in the game. I think they gelded him as a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old. But Touch of Star Quality has always loved the Belmont wide turns, and came back for Samantha Siegel and won a race. And we'll probably hear some more about him for the summer.
As disappointing as Destin was needing a race, I thought it was probably one of the best rides that I've seen so far at the Belmont meet that Jose Ortiz rode him. I figured he would be out there on the early lead, and Jose just set a garden trip, split horses at the top of the. I mean, it was just a picture perfect ride by Jose Ortiz, and I got to say, you know, Touch of Star Quality was thoroughly visually impressive, and you know, Jose did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, Touch of Star Quality is a big, big animal, and that's why he needs the wide turns of Belmont. You know, he's not quite as effective on other tracks where the turns are so tight. And I guess Samantha Siegel said that after they gelded him, even at that late age, it helped him to get out of the gate, and he used to have gate trouble. He seems to get out of the gate better now, so that horse probably will continue on. We have a great show tonight. We're proud to have the Mike Venezia Award winner, Kendrick Carmouche. He's holding on line. We'll get to him in a second. We've already heard from Irad Ortiz. We want to thank last week's guests, Chad Brown, Javier Castellano, and Sean Burke of Thoroughbros and his buddies. And they all were generous with our time. The only other news I'd like to mention about before we get to Kendrick is that Trevor McCarthy, who was injured in that spill the day after the Preakness, was injured more badly than we thought, and he's out for 6 months after shoulder surgery. So that's too bad for him. He was doing well and hitting on all cylinders, and it's just a shame that he has to take 6 months off at this time, and we'll try to get more information about him and get him on.
Absolutely, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's always a tough thing when a rider gets hurt, you know, any rider at any racetrack. You know, I went through it with, we missed almost 2 years with Rosario, and you know, happy to say he's back riding well, and he won two races the other day, he won a race today. You know, Trevor's a young, talented rider. You know, he'll be back in time as hopefully we hope to see Junior Alvarado. I was talking to Mike Salito today, and hopefully Junior Alvarado will be back pretty soon too. He's just another one who's been injury prone of late, and you know, it's a shame that they missed this time.
Right. It's another reminder about how dangerous this game is. Speaking of riders who won a race today, we have our guest Kendrick Carmouche on the line, and I'm gonna welcome him in. Good evening, Kendrick. Welcome to Race Trackers.
How you doing?
Kendrick, welcome. We have you're on with myself, Bill Gottimer, and Mike Monroe, and you probably heard we're talking about the various riders in the rider colony, and people talking about people who won a race today, and that includes you, I guess, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Kendrick Carmouche. I'm sorry, Mike. I just want to give Kendrick statistics and information.
No, go ahead.
Well, just Kendrick Carmouche needs no introduction to New York racing fans or racing fans in general, but we'll do it anyway. Kendrick's been a top-notch rider for 15 years now, and he's closing in on 3,000 wins, closing in on $90 million of earnings for his horses. His mounts earned almost $10 million in 2016, and most recently he's the winner of the Mike Venezia Award. So once again, welcome.
Thank you very much. How y'all doing, fellas? I appreciate it.
Mike, are you still on there?
I'm here. Kendrick, great speech, but receiving the award. I couldn't think of a more deserving a person than yourself. Since you've come to New York, you've opened a lot of eyes. You're doing superbly. You're out there every morning too, hustling. And that is, like I was telling Bill, that's what it's all about. We got to stay out there and hustle every day. And this is probably the toughest colony anywhere on the Northern Seaboard.
I would say so too, but I just want to tell you, thank you very much on congratulating me with the Mike Benizia Award, and you know the speech, you know, which everything comes from my heart. I've been real from the day I got in this game. I love it just as well as my dad, Sylvester Carmouche, loved it, and all my family. You know, it's a great honor to receive such an award as the Mike Benizia Award. Just for my dad, you know, that you know, I learned all of that from Sylvester Carmouche. You know, it was a really good experience of my life. And the riding colony in New York, I mean, it's tough as you're going to get right now. But you got to get out there and work every day. You got to be visual. And you got to ride when the afternoon comes. You know, that's what counts. You got to make it count in the afternoon to the winner's circle. And you know, just make it around there safe. It's always another day to win a race and make it bet.
Absolutely, Kendrick. And it was a fine ride you gave on the grass today. Bill, I got to say, one of Kendrick's greatest attributes is his way on the lead. He's just a great speed rider. He knows how to get a horse settled into stride, and you know, he always saves something for the finish. And I love to watch Kendrick on the lead. He actually reminds me of Angel Cordero, when Angel used to, you know, take a look behind him at the top of the stretch 99 out of 100 times he was headed for the winner's circle. And Kendrick, that's, you know, when I watch you on the lead, you know, that's just one of the things I think of all the time. You're very, very dangerous when you're out there on the lead.
thinks a lot. You know, it's you know, I've been in the game a lot of years, and I really understand the fact of time and everything else, but I really just feel like if you get along with your animal and you can get your animal to relax in your hands, for then tell the eight pole, it's really hard to outrun a horse from the eight pole home. I mean, I love it. It's something they teach in Louisiana, riding quarter horses, just being on quarter horses, but it's a fun game when you got the horse underneath you.
And Kendrick has ridden
Go ahead, Mike, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, Bill, and Kendrick's ridden a bunch of winners at Aqueduct in this meet for your client, Paradise Farms, with Toby Sheets.
Oh, Mr. Peter.
Yeah, that's right. Mr. Pete's a good friend and a sponsor and a client of mine and Mike's, and you know, we've had a lot of fun with you this whole winter and spring meet. I want to go back to the Venezia Award. I want to talk about your career, but I just for our listeners who may not know, the Mike Venezia Award is an award named after Mike Venezia, who was tragically killed in a riding accident in October 1988 at Belmont Park. And frankly, I remember it like it was yesterday, which is a little scary how well I remember it. But the award is given out, and Kendrick, this is the part that's so wonderful, and we have to highlight. It's given out for a jockey who exemplifies extraordinary sportsmanship and citizenship. So in addition to the wonderful athletic prowess that you have and you show, the fans and the writers and the people in racing, you know, honored you for your sportsmanship and citizenship, and there's no higher honor than to be honored by your peers in the game for that type of thing. And I think anybody who's ever seen you in the paddock and the big smile and the happiness you always bring with you can testify to that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, it's not, you know, I feel like if I've been through my struggle whenever I was a young kid, and I feel like where I'm at in my life, you really should be happy all the time because you're doing something that you really love. You talking to any and everybody that you don't know, but you want to just talk to them just to say good morning or ask them how their day going. It goes a long way in life because people just love somebody that's going to be happy throughout their life. That's what it feels like to me, and that's what I try to keep around my wife and kids, make my kids understand you got to be happy in life. It can't be that bad. And I just live by it. I respect everybody too, man. The respect goes a long way, and it's just what you want. We want people to treat you the same as you treat them, and that's my dad again. I got to give it to him.
Well, Kendrick, I guess your dad gave you the advice that you'd be better off in the sporting world leaving Louisiana and moving somewhere that might be, you know, more open-minded, might be less closed as far as attitudes of race and the like. And you chose to move to, of all places, the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, which is not really known for people being nice and friendly. How did you like making that change to become the king of Parks Racetrack, which I guess at the time was Philadelphia Park?
You know what? I just kept my southern ways and respect everybody. Say Mr. and Mrs. Open the door. Just always do something for, you know, to put a smile on people's face and make business and create my legacy, my last name. Because when you make your last name, you got to make it for your whole family, I believe. And going to Philadelphia and making my name really good there, and throughout the years I done traveled all over the world to just ride hard and just make the best for my family and my kids. I mean, it means so much to me, and believe me, Parks was so good to me. And all the New York trainers, I would like to say, before I came to New York, y'all all supported me, and I wrote for every one of you guys. And I made sure we go get our picture taken at the end of the day. And I like to say thank you to all them guys because they pretty much gave me a shot where I could have performed to my best in my talent at Philadelphia Park. And the people that supported me over the years in Philadelphia, it's unbelievable. It's from being an apprentice rider until now, and I'm in New York, and I still get texts from every trainer to congratulate me because they happy. They proud to see somebody that worked hard and still work as hard as he worked, even though he's not on top, but it's always a day.
Yep. Bill, five straight seasons with more than 200 victories, and Kendrick won the record of four consecutive riding titles, if I'm not mistaken, at Parks. That's true, right, Kendrick?
Yes, I went 4 years, and I came back done another year. I think I won like seven titles in all in Philadelphia, but,
wow.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, when I tell you, to be leading jockey year-round or anywhere in the country, but year-round is, I think, really, really tough because they got Buck Boys, they got journeyman riders whenever I wrote with Stu Elliott, Madrigal, Tony Black. I mean, it's a lot of things you learn more with the older riders back in the day until now. It just it elevates your career if you pay attention to it. And, I mean, Parks was a stepping stone for me. I always wanted to be in New York.
Well, you made that big jump to New York, and you spoke about your children. How old are they now, and how have they liked the move to New York?
Oh, you know, my kids are 7 and 10, Olivia and Kendrick, my wife Whitney. You know, they really don't like the city too much. They some country people like me, you know. You know, we live in Delaware, you know, we live in the cul-de-sac where we hear the big deers and the birds come in the backyard, and you know, they just love riding their horses, and my little boy loves just playing in the woods. I mean, you can't beat it, you know. They will have their day where they see the Big Apple and live here or whatever state, and they're going to make the best of it.
That's great. Mike referred to the beautiful speech you made to the family of Mike Venezia the other night on Monday, and I asked them if they'd like to be on tonight to congratulate you again, and then they just declined. It's a painful thing for them to discuss, and they also had some things to do tonight. But you went out there and you thanked the fans beautifully, and then you went out and you won a stakes race on T Loves to Fight through the mud in the Mike Lee race. Tell us a little bit about that win.
I would just like to say Mr. Hushin just done a good job with him, and you know I rode him a couple of times. I didn't get the hang of him till probably the third time I rode him. And ever since then, once I figured him out, I mean, he runs for me now. And, you know, just I never saw a horse improve so good with the rider figuring out the way he wants to run, you know. It's in the team, you know. And I got to say, Mr. Hushin asked me in the paddock the other day, Kendrick, what you think? And I say, we're not going to break his riding style because of the racetrack. It's still, you can't do it. You just got to ride the horse and hope for the best, which the speed collapsed, and we became winners.
He almost, Kendrick, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's the type of horse that he almost likes to bull his way through or go in between horses. It seems like he when you get him in that spot, he likes to come right through that hole or right through that gap, and then he just hits the gap and excels for you.
Oh, he really do. I remember the first time I rode him, I rushed him in a meeting special waiting, and he collapsed on him, and then Mr. Hushin put me back on him. And I think he run no good for 40. I think I kind of rushed him again. And then when I sit behind Jose and Irad this winter, and the dirt hit him, and I finally figured him out, I said, I need to sit on this horse. And ever since then, he runs for me. And he knows what he's doing. I just got to got him through there.
He almost reminds me of a running back, Kendrick. When he hits the hole, he just goes.
Oh man, I'm telling you, he's like Reggie Bush. I mean, if you can't catch him, you're pretty good.
Bill, you noticed that he mentioned the running back from the New Orleans Saints, so he still has those. He still has the Louisiana ties, the Cajun kid, you know. He still, you know, of course he mentioned someone from New Orleans. I caught that, Kendrick.
That's right.
Yeah, and I like listening to Mr. Bill Parcells talk about how much him and the coach got. But New Orleans got along so good, and he was in his camp and taught him all how to play, be a coach. And You know, I love hearing those things. You know, everybody's sport is very acknowledging if you pay attention to it and what they do and how they got to go through it. It's pretty much what a jockey do when he got to start from scratch and work his way up. It's just that, you know, nobody ever had the time to sit down and talk to us and ask us how we go about it, you know, to get where we got to go being an athlete, just like the football players and baseball players and everyone else.
Well, you know, Kendrick, Mike, you're speaking of New Orleans, and you're speaking of, for our listeners, and Kendrick, I'm sure you know this, but even the phrase referring to the New York as the Big Apple is a racing term. Right? That comes from an older groom at the fairgrounds who had a stakes horse and said, "I think I'm going to go up, take this horse up to New York and take a bite out of that Big Apple," meaning the big person that were up in New York. So every time I hear that, the Big Apple, I say that's a racing term, and it comes from a New Orleans groom who was talking about the big purses they offered up in the big city.
You're right. We don't call it New York. We just call it the Big Apple. You know, it's better that way. It sounds better that way.
You know, Kendrick, we're going to go back just for a second. Again, sometimes our listeners ask us to slow down a little bit, and you made the comment that you couldn't change the horse's running style, and what you were referring to was on Monday, because of the sloppy racetrack, it seemed like anybody who got to the lead early continued to win the race, and it was very difficult to gain ground through the stretch, and you did with T Loves to Fight. He likes to come from behind, and you didn't change the running style, and that was successful. With that, how closely do you, as a rider, do you read the racing form and try to predict what a pace will be like, or where there's an opportunity to kind of sneak away on the lead, as Mike says you're so good at?
Well, you know, it's all about reading the jockeys that's in the race with you. You know, I always believe you can have the horse, but you gotta know what jockeys is on each horse to understand which one to pressure, which one's gonna sit, or which one just gonna pressure just to see if you're gonna open up and you stay there. You know, I think it's more about the jockeys in the horses. Once you stay at a racetrack for so long, I've been here for 3 years. I pretty much know just about every riding style horse supposed to run. You can change it up at times and break a horse on the lead and get away with it because they think you're going to come back, which sometimes a horse keep running because he never been on the lead before. So, you know, it's all your purpose. I think when you're at Belmont, you can get away with it a little, but in the winter you really can because, you know, then the other guys come in from Gulfstream, and it's a whole totally different dynamic of riding. Not saying the guys in the winter are not riding the same as in the summer, but it's just, you know, you got different horses, so you got to change your ways to riding bigger and better horses and stronger horses on turf and dirt. You know, it's just it's a program that you got to do with these riders. All of them good. You can get the top 20 and just go anywhere and make leading jockey, I would say.
Well, Mike, right? It's much more of a chess match than people like to believe, right? When you look at it on paper, if everybody's looking at the same thing and you see that there's, as Kendrick says, there's a number of speed horses, you know, trying to predict what each rider is going to do is not all that easy.
Absolutely, and I'm sure Kendrick will confirm what I'm about to say is you can go out there with the best laid plans, and that gate opens, something happens, and you got to call an audible right away, right, Kendrick?
It's a whole different story. I mean, but you know, it'll change. It'll totally change. You have plan A, you have plan B. You might have to go to C before A or B. So you know, it's a whole different dynamic whenever you're going out there. Most and foremost, if the trainer give you instruction, you got to try to follow it within the first two or three jumps to make sure that that's going to work. If not, he puts you on his racehorse to win the race and make the best decision that you can out there. We only got split seconds. We humans, you know?
That's right. You know, in addition to being, you spoke about being an athlete, and you know, obviously top-notch athletes. But in addition to being the guy who smiles the most in the paddock, you're as for a jockey, you're also one of the taller jockeys. So do you struggle with weight? And if so, how do you manage to keep it in check?
Well, you know, I work, but it really don't take weight off unless you're hot. But you know, I just eat and do whatever I have to do daily, just like any other human that's outside of horse racing. You know, you just got to eat. You got to eat half of whatever you order, drink a lot of water, and I still come in heavy, but I get down to 16, 15 and a half every day, and you can tack your weight in New York, and it's tough certain days, the first day you come back, because the first day is always the hardest because you're a little bit heavier than what you are throughout the week. So once you get the first day out, you can manage your weight throughout the week until Sunday. So it's tough, but hey, it's what we want to do in life, so we got to manage it.
Yeah, I guess and as a taller rider, you tend to have a different crouch than some other riders. I mean, I've always thought of DeShawn Parker when he's so tall. I see him, when I see him get off a horse, I always think of someone unfolding like a map or unfolding like an accordion, because he just keeps getting taller and taller when he gets off the horse. But staying in shape is so difficult. Do you find staying in shape?
Well,
I'm not necessarily talking about the weight. I'm talking about the shape. Do you do anything else other than to ride the horses, or does that keep you in?
While I'm inside the steam room and I'm sitting there, you know, I only sit there for 30 minutes, and I work out pretty good in the steam room just to keep, you know, my muscles toned and keep my legs good. I do a lot of squats, and you know, you do certain things to help your thighs, your calves, and your upper arms, because you want to pump and stay still at the same time, and just to go the flow with the racehorse, you know. So I mean, I do that throughout every single day for 5 days. I only give my body 2 days to relax, Monday and Tuesdays.
Okay.
But you go down to parks a lot still every once in a while, Kendrick, and ride a couple of horses.
Oh, I love going to parks. I love going to parks. You know, it's good to go win races and see my friends, and you know, make short conversation with some of the people in the grandstand, because they saw me since I was 16 years old, just bloom like a flower. I mean, you know, I'm part of their life just as much as, you know, I feel like my wife and my kids, you know, because they just, you know, they all want to see me do good. I love going to parks. And
I got to tell you, Bill, you know, Kendrick, this winter, he rode a lot of horses, and I know that he's on the radar of Mr. Bill Mott, who's, you know, one of the finest horsemen that we've ever come to meet. And I know Bill likes to use Kendrick, and that's always a feather in your cap when you can ride for the Mott stable.
Yes, sir. I mean, it's just a pleasure riding for Mr. Billy Mott. And like he always say, don't take nothing that comes easy. You know, it's and I love that saying, because when you get on the horse, you just got to ride the way the horse want to come out the gate. If you want to break on the lead, you go to the lead. If you want to sit on him. It's just part of it, you know. And it's really good. It's very good when you're a jockey and you want to ride for everybody on the racetrack, because I feel like that's the only way you get to the top. That's what I always done all my career.
Well, you know, clearly, you know, I want to go back to Parks just for a second, and you have to be happy about seeing the announcement that Parks made just this week, that they're going to get much more serious as far as the quality of the or the health of the horses that are running. They're going to take a number of problems they've had with drug positives for trainers. They're going to take it much more seriously and try to put out a safer product. I mean, I guess as a rider, that's one thing that you're always in the hands. Your life is always in the hands of the trainers that you're riding for, and I think a lot of people in racing think that Parks has through different ownership changes, has seen a bit of a lesser of quality and a lesser of safety. And it's good to see that they're making steps to bring that back to where it needs to be.
Yes, sir, I agree with you. I really do think, you know, as these racetracks get casinos or anything that built around them or that attach horse racing to racetracks, I really do think it's the same way as NASCAR or basketball or baseball. You got to set rules and you got to make the industry better every year, make more fans come out, protect riders, make everything safety just as well as any other sport. You got to upgrade each year to the standard of life. That's the way I see it, and I'm sure a lot of other people see it like that way at parks too.
Well, the strides that have been made in racing in rider safety in all lifetimes, Mike, is amazing, right? From going from what used to be rails made of wooden posts that were immovable. You know, to now, you know, and I guess, Kendrick, many of our listeners know, but some may not know, you know, the riders now wear Kevlar vests, which are lightweight and give you a little bit of protection if you would have a fall or a spill. You know, all those safety precautions really didn't exist 20 years ago, right, Mike? 30 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like we said, every time these guys go out there, you know, they're risking their lives, and anything that we could do to make it a little bit safer for them, it has to be done. I mean, these guys are the greatest athletes in the world, and you know, like Kendrick will tell you, anytime they go out there, you know, a disaster can happen. So thank God that they're all doing measures for safety for the riders, because you know the riders are of the utmost, the riders and the horses are the utmost concern out there.
Yes, sir, I agree with you.
Well, I know it also. Tell us a little bit. We'll let you go. I don't want to keep you. I know morning comes early for riders. Mike always reminds me that everybody's out there early in the morning. You know, we attorneys can sleep late in the morning, but riders have to get up and trainers get out there early. How tell us about the fans. You're a big fan favorite, obviously, by the votes that you've received for the Venezia Award, and you're always a fan favorite from a whole host of people. Where are the fans, though, tougher when you have a losing favorite? Is it tougher in Parks, Aqueduct, or Belmont?
Oh, my gosh, Aqueduct is the worst. I mean, listen, I was here years ago, and I didn't watch these guys run a lot of jockeys out of here just because they listened to them. I mean, I mean, I didn't laugh over the years. I mean, but whenever I tell you, hey, they either going to make you stronger or they're going to make you weaker if you listen to them. So, hey, man up. Go put one in the winner's circle.
I think we knew the answer that Aqueduct was the worst. A little bit related, and we'll go off topic a little bit. You know, Mr. Met yesterday, they fired Mr. Met yesterday for giving the fingers to fans. Yes, giving the finger to fans yesterday after the Mets lost. I don't know if you saw that.
I heard about it. I heard about it.
Well, as my wife points out, A, how do you know they fired Mr. Met? Because you don't know who Mr. Met is. So they may or may not have fired him, but the second question comes in Queens. You know, giving someone the finger is not necessarily disrespectful. It's just kind of normal communication. So I guess Aqueduct falls in that line, right? That the same guy who criticizes you one race cheers you the next.
Yes, I mean, hey, listen, I look at it like this. The reason why fans always talk to them and I talk to fans because they are part of the game as much as I'm part of the game. People don't look at it like that, but they spend their money every day at the racetrack, or they'd like to come gamble and bet race horses and support jockeys and everybody's career that's on the racetrack, you know? So why not you don't need to give them tips. You just need to say hello, you know. I mean, when they say hello back to them, you know. I just feel like part of the game. They would make the game keep turning. So you got to acknowledge those people to, for them to bring younger generation to come. That's the way I'm looking at it.
I agree, and Aqueduct is definitely the home of the hardcore horse player. You probably see the same faces standing by the rail or inside the glass every day, right, Kendrick?
Just smile. That's all you can do. Smile. When they say something bad to you, just smile at them. They'll be like, wow, this guy, he's out there.
and of course, every once in a while, they're right, you know, because they do follow the game closely enough. So I'm sure you have – I'm sure there's some rides you wish you could have back, and there's some decisions I know in my life. There's decisions I wish I could have back and make again. And you know, just because someone's screaming at you doesn't mean they're necessarily wrong. Well, that's too funny. I'm glad that the Aqueduct even outshines Philadelphia Park as far as as far as vocal fans. That's too
well
funny.
It's year round too. You got to remember that it's year round, so you're gonna see the same people out there every day at Park. So you know they gotta keep you motivated all the time, so they can keep making money year round. When you switch off to each meet, you got different kind of character. That's the way life is.
That's right. Well, Kendrick, I can't thank you enough for joining us, and we want to congratulate you again. And the Mike Venezia Award, of course, I mean, any award that's given to you by fans and peers and is for citizenship and sportsmanship is something you should cherish. And those of us who knew Mike Venezia and knew his reputation, there's no better award you could have in New York racing. So congratulations on that. And we look forward to seeing you continue on in the New York. We will say, Mike and I will say that people who come on the show have immediate good luck. So I would expect that you'll probably win a bunch of races in the next few days.
I appreciate it. You need all the luck you can get, bro. You need all the luck you can get. But I'd like to say thank y'all. It's always good to get on a talk show and everybody talk so real and say what they feel is right. And I just want to say, when you go through life and you work hard and you're an honest person and you're a real person to yourself, first, you got to look in the mirror and be real to that person you see. When you become that person, you find happiness and joy all around you.
Well, words to live by. Again, thanks so much, Kendrick. We'll see you very much.
See you in the morning, Kendrick. Great having you on.
All right, God bless, Mike.
Kendrick Carmouche, everyone.
Good night.
That's funny, right, Mike? Always, it's very, very New Orleans, way of thinking. Let's not forget who got us here between the fans and the gamblers and the owners and the trainers and everybody who makes the game go around.
Nah, he's a great guy. He's a class act, and he's a good rider. And he's got all the qualities. And he's like a politician in the morning. He shakes everyone's hand, which you need to do.
Right. Well, it is funny, you know, in the paddock, he's always so happy. And,
absolutely.
You know, why not? Right. Why not? We're all standing. We're all making a living. That's all you can ask for.
Exactly.
So that's great. We may be joined in a little bit by our friend Jay. Jay has some comments that he's going to go over some of the week coming up. And as we said, it's a bit of a slow week. I pulled out some. I looked at the card this upcoming week and pulled out some highlights. And Mike, I'm sure you probably have done so too. The Belmont cards Saturday and Sunday are, as you would imagine, a little bit light because they're gearing up for the big Belmont next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But I guess the highlight of the week looks to me on the ninth race at Belmont this Saturday. And it's a good grass race, and it's Chad Brown's Ticonderoga against Bill Mott's Good Samaritan and Jimmy Jerkin's Secretary of War. Did you get a chance to look at that race at all?
I did, and Phil D'Amato is also shipping one in from the coast in there too, Bill.
Oh, I didn't even focus on that. I mean, as if it wasn't, you know, complicated enough. Ticonderoga is a horse that I thought had turned the corner at Gulfstream, and I thought was going to run some huge races, and he disappointed on his last race, which I think was on the, if I'm not mistaken, on the Kentucky Derby undercard, or
yes.
maybe no, on the Bluegrass undercard.
Bluegrass undercard, yeah.
Keeneland. And then Good Samaritan, I thought, ran a huge race and just got caught in a slow pace and just couldn't necessarily gain enough on the winner, but I thought ran a huge race, and I think he's super talented. And then Secretary of War, Jimmy Jerkin, said they toyed with the idea of taking him down to Pimlico for the contingent of horses that they took down with them for the Preakness, or the day before the Preakness, the Black Eyed Susan undercard, but they decided to stay home for this race. So all those horses, plus Phil D'Amato's horses, is makes for a really good field. And I guess whoever wins that race will come out of the race tired, I would think.
Yeah, it should be a real, real good contested race. Phil D'Amato's horse won the Singletary last time out, and he that was his first start in a year, almost a year since the Breeders' Cup turf race. And you know, Phil, when Phil ships, he's usually sipping for a reason, and he has Rajiv Mirage on him. But what do you make of Oscar Performance in that race coming back? He's been a little disappointing since his return to the races since the November 4th Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf.
Well, I guess that shows you what a tough race it is that Oscar Performance, who was last year's grass champion or one of the grass champions from last year, isn't even mentioned. I didn't even bother to mention. And I guess he does seem to be a horse that maybe sometimes horses, when they go from two to three, don't mature as much. And they were good at two because they were kind of ahead of the maturity curve than three-year-olds. He has been disappointing in both his races this year. And I tend to sense that as a three-year-old, he may be a cut below, certainly a cut below what he was as a two-year-old, but maybe a cut below these horses right now. I mean, I could be wrong on that, but I think until he runs a big race, you have to assume that he's not as dominant as he was as a two-year-old.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Bill. I'm a big Good Samaritan fan. I loved his first start at Saratoga when he broke his mane. He beat Ticonderoga in that race as a maiden, and his Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf race was excellent. He was flying. He was like six or seven wide coming home and flying home. And even last time out off from a November layoff since the Breeders' Cup Turf to run on Derby Day in the American Turf Stakes, he came flying home again from the 10 path. And I always like watching him, and I think he's a very, very talented horse. And not to go for the chalk, but he's definitely without a doubt the horse to beat on Saturday in the Pennine Ridge.
Yeah, I think so too. Although Jimmy Jerkins and Chad Brown, you can't go wrong get betting them either. So it's an excellent race. Maybe not a betting opportunity, but certainly a great race to watch. Monmouth on Saturday. We don't mention Monmouth anymore. Monmouth has struggled to fill their race cards. They've struggled with the class of horses because the purses they offer are tremendously small. Monmouth has been around forever, but they're struggling badly because they banked a lot on getting sports gambling in New Jersey at the racetracks, and that hasn't happened. Now they're talking about casino gambling, but it may take as much as 5 or 6 years. And I guess there's a real question whether New Jersey racing will survive now, which would be a shame. All that being said, Monmouth cards are not what they used to be, but somehow they managed to pull together like a 13 or 14 race card for Saturday. I don't know what to make of that.
It's amazing. I know the 12 race card on Saturday, Bill, at Monmouth, they've been struggling. They've been struggling trying to make the races. I wish them the best. I mean, I know there's a very, very small horse population down there from what we were expecting. Some people said they were shipping in and some trainers didn't show up. But I think a big deal with the Monmouth is a lot of the trainers have decided to stay at Gulfstream. Those used to be the trainers that would ship up to Monmouth, with big strings, and a lot of them have remained in Gulfstream. Todd Fletcher's not at Monmouth yet with a string.
That's unbelievable after all the years and the success he had there. But you can't blame them. The purses are small, and it's unsure what the future is going to bring. But all that being said, Monument's Race 11 has a huge field of fillies, and one of our favorite Time in Motion is running back. And Time in Motion is a horse who has yet to recapture her best form, the form that she had last year as a three-year-old. It has not transferred to being a four-year-old yet, and has been disappointing in two starts. And it's funny, I spoke to Jimmy Toner and his delightful daughter, Catherine Toner, the other day in the paddock, and I know they're hoping for the best, but Time in Motion, this is a little easier company. This should be a field she should be able to boss around if she's what she was last year, but the jury's still out whether she's come back full speed yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the last race was over that real soft course. We were there, I think, Bill, that day in a real soft course where she ran over, and you know, maybe she just didn't like it. And she's a nice filly, and you know, I wish her just the best. And Jimmy's a great trainer, and especially excels with these turf fillies. And you're probably right; you probably get her back to where she belongs. And you know, sometimes you got to call an audible with these horses. And you know, I'm sure Jimmy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, well, she's drawn the far outside post, but it's a field that she should be able to boss around. And then finally, and I want to get to our buddy Jay, who's on the line, but finally, the other race of the weekend is the Beholder Mile, of course, named after Beholder, who is just a wonderful, wonderful filly and mare. And it's a small field. It's a five-horse field, and I think one of the horses has been entered for Sunday as well, so it's likely a scratch. So it really comes down to being a match race between Stellar Wind, who is so good for the last few years, against Bob Baffert's horse, Val Dori, who has won, I don't know, six in a row or seven in a row, but didn't look quite as impressive last time. And this is the race that Songbird opted not to come back in and decided to come east for. So some people were saying that Songbird decided to come east to run on Belmont Day rather than face Stellar Wind and Val Dori. So that's the eighth race on Santa Anita.
Right, Songbird's going to take on the field in the Ogden Phipps on Belmont Stakes Day.
Right. So that's certainly the race of the weekend, I would think. With that, let me patch in. I believe it's Jay who's been waiting. So hold on a second. Good evening. You're on Race Trackers.
Hey guys, how are you? How are you guys doing today?
Fine, Jay. Our friend Jay.
Hey Jay.
Jay Dallascar.
How are you? Mike? Has everything good?
Yes, very good. How are you, pal?
Oh, I can't complain. We had a little light week of action this week, but what could we expect? You know, like next week will be the big week.
There's only so many races and so many horses to go around, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. Between Monmouth and like Chicago Racing, it seems both of those places are struggling.
Well, there seems to be a nationwide lack of horses, which is, I guess it was deemed to happen. And as Mike says, they're running so many more races in Gulfstream than they have in other years that's one source of the problem.
Yeah, well, with the casino, the casino really helps it a lot. And now, like you said, Gulfstream running all year round. So I guess some guys are just staying. Like you said, the guys that would be shipping to Monmouth, they're just staying up there. So, I mean, you know, better purses. Hopefully, like, the racing, you know, gets a little more stronger, you know. But, like, I mean, of course, Monmouth had cut days down last year. They cut racing, 4 days to 3 days, correct?
Monmouth is only 2 days now, Jay, and it might only be 2 days for the rest of the meet.
Yeah, wow. Jeez, it's a shame. I mean, like, it's a shame. I mean, Monmouth is pretty flat, you know, like, but racing has taken a lot of hit. Even in Southern California, you can see, apparently, like, Tim Risso went down there to see what he can do over there to help bring a little California racing back, you know. Of course, they've had success at Gulfstream.
Right, and starting this week,
this is starting this weekend, Jay. I don't know if you guys were familiar, but no parks on Sundays now for a while, too. Parks is only going to be Monday, Tuesday, and Saturday.
I don't know. That's pretty interesting. I don't know if you guys would agree on this on this topic. Like, I mean, the game has changed a lot. You know, I guess, you know, as you can see, a lot of places, the casino helps boost up the purses. So some we do need that. But unfortunately, you know, it's a shame. But, like, you know, there's so many different ways today, like, to just bet horses that, you know, I mean, they're trying to figure out a way to enhance to attract people, you know, by doing, you know, like, night racing in some places, you know, and, like, at my concerts, but I mean, I would hope it could help, but just the fact that with all these, you know, ways to bet races, I mean, that, you know, that's taking a lot from people showing up at the track as well.
Well, I guess along those lines, Jay, the point you're making is that they've branched into other things, and Monmouth got had a big crowd this weekend, and the weather was kind of miserable, but it had a big on-track crowd, you know, 20-something thousand people, which was great, and it was brought largely by a parade of food trucks. They had they advertised that they were going to have every food truck in New Jersey, I think, in the grandstand at Monmouth. And so they had 20,000 people, but the per capita handle, which means the average amount bet on the racetrack by each patron, was only $36. So it was pretty clear that everybody who came there came for the food trucks and wasn't involved in the gambling, or if they were involved in the gambling, they were doing it on their phone, which might be a more accurate measure. But the per capita handle used to be what was measured mostly in New York racing. It always had the highest per capita, meaning a New York racing fan bet more on track than any other racing fan anywhere else in the country. And you know, maybe that's changed.
Well, it seems that way. It really has seemed that way. I mean, if you watch TVG, they're always having these advertisements, like, I guess, you know, to get money back a certain way and all this. I mean, there's just so many ways to go now. You know, before it wasn't, you know, the old time people used to like to bet, they'd have to go to the races and enjoy a good day out, watch racing, and that's how it was.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of old times, I don't know, I wrote that article for PassTheWire.com this week, and I don't know if anybody got a chance, if either of you guys got a chance to read it, but it was about the minus pools and a way to end it. And I normally write those articles, and I normally get a lot of feedback, good and bad, from people, and I got no feedback from this one at all. I guess the topic was just too dry.
Maybe, Bill. I didn't get a chance to read it. I will definitely, you know, hopefully read it this weekend, but
I'll definitely take a look at it.
Yeah, I'd be interested in people's thoughts. I mean, it's not a fun article. It's more a technical article, and it's an idea, really. The point I was trying to make is that technology now allows you to do things that you otherwise couldn't do in the game, and I trace back, you know, how a lot of bets that bookmakers used to take, they couldn't take when they went to the parimutuel machines because of technology, but now they can. And one of the things they should be able to do is eliminate minus pools without having to cancel show betting. And I outline a way that they could do that. But it is amazing. Sometimes you put out an article, and the article I put out about the stewards got a lot of people calling me and saying they liked it or they didn't like it, or it would never work, or it was a great idea. And this one I put out, and I just got no feedback at all. So I don't know if anybody read it or it was just too dull. But obviously you two guys didn't read it, so maybe it just came out in a bad time.
I probably could have maybe been a bad time, though, but like, I'll surely check it out and see, give you my opinion, you know, like, I've been, like, literally just reading a little bit here and there about the racing world, but, you know, past, you know, few days and stuff. But I will definitely take a look at it.
Jay, we're getting back to racing. We were talking before you came on. I guess the big race this week is Stellar Wind versus Val Dori. Do you have any thoughts there?
Well, I think that was a pretty smart move by what they did with, bringing Songbird to the Ogden Phipps. You know, I mean, you've had those two horses that she would have faced if she would have stayed in California. I mean, it's a little tough task to come off the shelf. And, you know, I mean, she's very talented, but you don't want to bring her back to a race with that magnitude, you know, right away. So I think Jerry and them did the right thing by bringing her, for a race like the Ogden Phipps. Because those two horses, they already had, Stellar Wind already had one race already, and Val Dori's been, racing basically all year. So, I mean, they have, a step ahead of her. So I think it's a really good decision just to wait down the line, you know, for another race, give it a little easy comeback race, and,
I mean, Val Dori has been so impressive and has gotten so good. And then in the last race, Val Dori all of a sudden, I don't know if she lost focus or she got tired or she lost interest, but at the top of the stretch, all of a sudden she kind of wobbled home in her last race. So I was all excited about Val Dori's chances of beating just about anybody until that last race, and I don't know what to make of it.
I think she might have lost a little focus, I think. But I'm sure Bob will have her ready. Although, you know, it's not a big deal, but Stellar Wind is no slouch, you know, so I think Bob will have her ready. So this will probably be a really good test for her, you know, to see where she's at, you know. If she
it's
can
certainly,
mention
certainly
those,
the race it's certainly the race of the weekend in my opinion, you know.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's probably, although it's a small field, I don't know how many horses, and I didn't look at it yet, but I'm sure this is probably, the best field, you know, going this week right now. I mean.
Now, it's a five-horse field, but I think they expect to see one horse scratch. Finest City is also in there, who's a nice runner. But
yeah, I see, so that's pretty good, decent.
One thing I do want to highlight on, and Mike, we didn't talk about this at all, and I don't really have any opinion, but I will point out for our listeners, for what it's worth, this is the weekend of the year where Penn National runs its big card, and Penn National has a bunch of nice grass races and nice dirt races Saturday night, and Penn National is a small racetrack in the Pocono Mountains, which I've never been to see races live. I've been there to see it, but I've never seen races there, and it's normally, you know, considered lower class racing, but once a year they put on a good card. Have either of you guys ever gone to the races at Penn National?
I've always would love to have gone to the Penn to races there, but I've never had. But a lot of people have said it's a nice venue to attend, you know, to watch a little live racing from what I've heard. But it's on my radar, though.
Mike, you've made it there once or twice?
I've been there once with the jock one night when we went to ride, and you know, like you said, you know, it's a beautiful facility. The casino's beautiful. I mean, you know, of course the racing is a couple of what we're used to seeing, but they got a pretty good show this week. They got the Penn Mile, the Grade 2 Penn Mile, which is a nice race. They have a couple of stakes. I think they got six or seven stakes that day. So, hopefully everything goes good and they put on a good show and they get a little bit of crowd out there.
Yeah, and you have all the big riders. Javier Castellanos down there, among others. And I guess what will they do? They'll go straight from Belmont by helicopter, I guess, out to Penn?
Oh, no,
Bill.
Right, No, they won't be at Belmont. The races start at 3:45 there that day. So
okay.
those jocks won't be riding in New York that day. I know Javier's not riding. Irad is also is down there. Kendrick is down there. Chris DiCarlo's down there.
Luis Diaz.
They'll just go directly down there. They won't have time. That's not a short trip from Belmont to Penn National.
No. I mean, see, that's why I thought you'd have to do it by helicopter. I thought they ran at night. I didn't remember that. And Jay, you said Luis Saez is going down there too?
Right. 3:45 post starts that day.
Right.
Yeah.
This used to be one of the races that Ben's cat used to run down there all the time. Not necessarily on this day. I think they have another big card in the fall that Ben's cat used to run in. But I was trying to stay on the radar screen with Penn National anyway.
They have a good race. They have two good races there. I believe it's Thanksgiving Eve that they run two stake races there.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I believe there's a race on the Thanksgiving round. It's named for the fabulous Strike, who probably ran there a few times. I think probably.
Right.
Yeah. That's doing the autumn meet. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mike.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Jay, we spoke a little earlier. We'll probably wrap up early tonight because it's such a quiet week. But, Jay, I want to get your thoughts. Mike and I spoke earlier about Bob Baffert's two wins, one in the Gold Cup, which is now called the Santa Anita Gold Cup, which still kind of doesn't make a lot of sense, and the other one in the Lone Star Park race with Danzy Candy. Did you have any thoughts about Cupid's race and American Freedom's race and then later on Danzy Candy's?
Well, I was, I was pretty surprised that I thought it was like he's another clunker. Well, I should say another clunker. I thought American Freedom would run a huge race. You know, I thought, after that Churchill, because he hasn't performed well at Churchill, so I tossed that out. And that was his first race back. But I thought, maybe Bob would have him right where they would want him for the later part of the year. But, he threw in a little – he was on the muscle early, but, I thought he performed better. So I was kind of disappointed from his showing. And from Cupid, who hasn't ran, over 8 months, that was really an interesting performance by Cupid. And I guess another horse, they'll have to regroup is Midnight Storm. I figure they'll probably cut him back, maybe Midnight Storm. I think they should. But Cupid, I was pretty surprised with Cupid showed a very good effort, coming off that lengthy layoff. And apparently, Baffert said that he's going to be sending Cupid on the road, it looks like, towards maybe the Saratoga campaign and some other spots. It looks like.
Okay. Well, the combination of Cupid's name and him being white, and Bob Baffert will probably drag a lot of attention wherever he goes, surely.
Yeah. And as for Danzy Candy, that's pretty nice to see that horse coming back and perform at the level that he is right now, they have some options to go with Danzy Candy. But it just seems like besides Arrogate out west, although it's so early, the East Coast contingents, they seem to be really doing very well. Shaman's Ghost put another nice performance, the Stablemate Dolphus ran a huge race. So,
right.
The older division, it's not bad. It's not bad, let's see what happens with the others, Connect. Let's see what happens. He progresses. His name could be mentioned.
Yeah, well, Connect. We spoke a little earlier about it, Jay. Connect is injured, so he's not so sure what he's not going to make the Met Mile, and
wow.
Not saying what's they're not saying what his problem is. They're saying it's minor, but they're reassessing his career. So I don't know what that means. You know, that could mean anything.
Okay.
But
and then of course you got Gunrunner.
Yeah, Gunrunner. I guess the Whitney is starting to shape up as the next time the race will be you know the big I guess the big older horses running would be the Whitney.
Yeah, I would say the Whitney. Don't we have another one, the Suburban?
Yeah, the Suburban, but that doesn't seem to draw anybody for some reason.
Yeah. The Suburban really never draws. Hasn't drawn well, but like you said, Saratoga's the next obvious spot. I mean, next couple weeks we'll see Gunrunner, who to me and mine, he's the second top older horse in that division. Although besides what Shaman Ghost has been doing, but Gunrunner to me is the second besides Arrogate on top in the older division, and then I would put Shaman Ghost the third, you know, so.
Right. Well, a lot to look forward to. I think, Mike, maybe we'll get ready to wrap it up. Jay, are you going to make it out to the Belmont Stakes?
No, actually, I'm going to be doing some farm tours. I'm actually doing some farm tours this year. You know, this year.
What will you be doing this year?
I'm going to a few farms. I'm going to go out to some farms and see some of the stallions. It's going to be great. It's a great card. I know. I always love the Met Mile. I'm like, it should be a great card, but I will definitely be tuning in and keeping my eyes. And I hate to fortunately bust your bubbles, you guys, but I really have to root for Classic Empire to win the Belmont. But it's a shame that none of those horses that, you know, at least one of them should have been in there. But, you know, we understand there's races down the line. So we'll see them meet again. But, I'm rooting for Classic Empire. I mean, he's ran two solid bang up races, and I hope the final leg, you know.
But he gets one.
What
did
you guys
feel?
How could you not root for him, Jay? I agree. You know, even though I might go somewhere else for a little bit more value, but he's a hard hitter, and you know he showed up all three times, and you know kudos to Mark Cassie for keeping him keeping him right and getting him ready for all these races where he's run credible in the first two.
Yeah, I mean they could say, you know, let's just wait for the summer campaign with him and stuff, but I mean, it's good for racing, you know, it really is, you know, to be like, you know, although there is nothing, you know, yeah, but it's good for it.
We're going to have a lot of handicapping to do, Bill, for next week's show, but I'm going to tell Jay, while we're on the phone together, Jay, we're going to give one race to our host to handicap, where I know he did very well on last year, Jay, so don't let him fool you. Bill, your race is the Jiper. I know you did very well in the Jiper last year,
that's right.
And that's going to be
right.
Your key race, your handicap. Jay and I will handle everything else, but we want you to handicap the Jiper for us because I know you were head on with that one last year.
Yeah, it's
always a little nice race, the Jiper.
Always,
yeah,
always, Jay. That's one of my favorite races on that day.
Yeah, last year I don't know if Lightning's going to strike twice, but last year there were two big long shots that ran 1-2. I think the exacta was $1,000 or $800.
That was Lisa.
That was the Jimmy Ryerson horse, wasn't it?
Yeah. One was Ryerson, and the other was a Clement horse. And actually, it's funny, like now, the Ryerson horse is actually with Christoph. And he won early, in his first race back this year. And, so that should be an interesting race. It's always a little nice race.
Right. Well, I'll do my best to try to replicate last year's selection. It may take me another generation to get it right again, but we'll try it next week. Well, with that, guys, I guess if there's nothing else, we don't have any callers, and if there's nothing else that we should highlight on, maybe we'll call it early tonight. Go watch the NBA Finals.
I guess we'll go with the Racetrackers pick of the weekend in the Pennine Ridge. I guess we'll just take Good Samaritan over Ticonderoga and Brian Lynch's horse, the one we spoke
Oscar
about earlier,
Forbes.
Right, Oscar performance. I think he's going to be tough. I think he's going to the real Oscar performance is going to show up. But I like Good Samaritan. I think he's going to be one of the real tough turf horses this year as a 3-year-old. I think he's going to be one of the leading candidates in that division this year.
So we'll go with Good Samaritan over Ticonderoga and Oscar performance. So with that, guys. I'll play the song and we'll be out. And Jay, if we don't speak to you next week, enjoy the farm tour. And Mike, I'll see you over the weekend. I'm sure.
Absolutely, guys.
I'll call and we'll handicap the race next week.
Excellent.
Sounds good.
Thank you to Kendrick Carmouche and thank you to Irad Ortiz being our guest tonight. Thanks, everyone.
Great job.
Okay.